It is my privilege to introduce tonight's honorary 10-minute speaker from Visalia with 2 years and a month, Christy M.
Hi, I'm Christy Mack. I'm an alcoholic, a recovered alcoholic. I have to set my my clock because I'm long-winded. Hold on just a minute. There we go. Oh. Will you tell me when 10 minutes is up?
Sure.
All right. Never mind on that. Anyways, God separated me from alcohol on September 27, 2018. And there's no other explanation as to how I was separated other than God, it was time, and God put that plan into motion because there was no human power that was going to stop me from drinking myself to death. I find it interesting how I've heard so many stories, childhood experience and how you were raised, you know, goes from everywhere to a family like mine where there was really not alcohol to children of alcoholics and addicts, and doesn't really seem to make a difference, right? But in my family, I grew up with the idea that that drinking was kind of funny. My mom and dad didn't drink, but my dad was raised, well, picture whatever you think of as oaky in your head and times that like by 10. That was my family or my dad. And he lived with my great-grandma, his grandparents, his grandma and his grandpa. My great-grandpa was paralyzed in a race car accident. So they had to live, and that's why I thought they lived with my dad's family, but turns out there was probably some other reasons. And they lived in Arkansas, Oklahoma, Kansas. They kind of were going all, like grapes around. They were kind of just going around. And my dad is a master storyteller. And he loved to make us laugh about his colorful childhood that included this drunk Grandma Ruby and a monkey. And they had a monkey. My grandpa won it in a poker tournament. And they had this monkey named Beatty who also was an alcoholic and smoked and was a pill addict. And I'm not making this up. And so growing up, we would be like, Dad, tell us another story about Beatty. And he would have this drunk monkey story with the drunk grandma story. And it was all really funny. And at the, I mean, what's funnier than a monkey, a drunk monkey, and a drunk grandma, and a paralyzed drunk grandpa. And he would end every story saying, but kids, remember, nothing good comes from alcohol. And as a young little girl who was really pretty sweet and a good kid, I can remember thinking, kind of seems like a lot of fun comes from drinking alcohol. And that was not a deterrent to me, you know, and I only heard these, like, funny, great stories, right? I didn't hear the nasty side until after, you know, I was an adult, that my grandma was in an institution 3 times for alcohol-induced psychosis. That my grandpa was a horrible, mean dad that did bad things to his kids and was an alcoholic too. That they were embarrassing, that they couldn't make, they had to take care of these people. But somehow my dad portrayed this as funny. And I just kind of had this idea that when you were young, you had fun in high school and college, and then you grew up and you stopped drinking. And that's kind of what I tried. Never in my childhood was I not going to drink. I'm like, when I'm 16, I'm getting a car, a boyfriend, and I'm drinking beer. And that's what I did. And, you know, looking back, that slow progression for me, that craving was there from the very first time I ever drank. I completely overdid it. And you know how Bill says, I had arrived. I was like, I have arrived. Like, this is fun. This is what high school is all about, right? And college just kind of got worse, but no serious consequences. You know, really, I had control because I set out to get messed up. You know, I set out to get really, really drunk every time I drank. But I could pull it together for, you know, school on Monday or whatever. But I was different back. I knew, You know, I never understood why my roommates, we would go out on a Thursday night, they would go home, I would stay out and be rolling in Sunday night, and they'd be all pissed off at me, and I'm like, hey, we're just jealous, because I'm so fun. You know, I missed Saturday cleanup as a group, and, you know, that was kind of like, people were already kind of pissed off at me early on for my over-drinking, you know. But I got married, had kids, stopped drinking, and I really did stop drinking, but when I did, it was a shit show every time. You know, it was like a wedding, say, like, you know, and it's like, once I start drinking, I'm not going to stop. I'm not going home, you know, until someone forces me. And, you know, that kind of continued for years. You know, my progression kind of continued a couple times a year when my kids were little, and went through a bad divorce. My kids were older, and I discovered wine. And that, for me, is when the obsession kicked in, because I look back and I took that to the extreme. You know, I was like, constantly looking up, what goes with steak? You know, I have arrived again. You know, I'm an adult now. And that progressed and progressed and progressed to where I'm binging on the weekend. I'm drinking every night. I'm lying. My kids are crying, stop drinking. And I'm like, everyone, all the other moms drink wine when they're making dinner after work, right? You know, and they're like, yeah, but you're drinking like 5 bottles. And my life became unmanageable. Things started falling apart, you know. I started losing jobs, getting evicted from houses, and I lost friends. But that they were also jealous, and I firmly believe that they were just jealous because I was so much fun. They don't want me at the party because I'm just so much fun, you know. Pretty soon I was that lone wolf that Bill talks about. I was drinking alone, and frankly, I liked it that way because no one could talk to me about it. Because when someone talked to me about my drinking, I was really mad. I started losing the material things, my car. By the way, car payments, I didn't realize this, they're not like eviction where they give you like 60 days or whatever. They like call you one time and you say, yeah, I'll pay it by Friday, and you don't, and you wake up and your car's gone. I learned that in my alcoholism, but, and, you know, pretty soon my kids were gone, you know, and they were just kind of, I guess, at this point in the way. That's a horrible thing to admit, but I was like, huh, don't have to make them dinner. I can just drink all day and night, you know, in and out of rehabs where I knew everything and I was smarter than everyone. I'm like, just needed a break, you know, and I'm so thankful for as hard as it is for everything that happened to me, because I needed that humbling experience, because my head was this big. And I still had these grandiose ideas, right, that like, okay, I'm going to get out of this rehab, and I'm going to be, you know, running COS Child Development, and I'm going to get buy a house. And it's like, Christy, you can't even stay sober an hour, you know, like that's not happening. You're living in your car right now. You know, and I still have this, like, I'm going to be something, you know, and I make my mark in this world, you know. And pretty soon I was dying and living in my car. I was killing my alcohol. And it was not funny anymore. There was no party going on. It was me drinking so that I wasn't sick. And I was hopeless because I wanted to stop and I could not. And God stepped in and you know, somehow found myself in my last rehab, and that it's too long to go into, but how that all came about had nothing to do with me. I could not even function, let alone get myself to appointments for rehab and, you know, to get there. And I got in there, I crawled on my hands and knees, and I said, tell me what to do, and I'll do it. And that's what I did. I stayed there for 6 months. Every suggestion everything they said, I got, you know, a sponsor, I started my work, and you know, I still wasn't doing that right, but I just knew that I had to do what was suggested. And you know, here I am 2 years later, this weekend, what sobriety brings me is this weekend I have four kids ages 14 to 21, and for the first time in over 4 years, all four of my kids are under my roof. So you know, the material things, they come back. You know, mine have come back, and then I relapse, and I lose them, and they come back. But you know what? Having my four kids, respect me and know the mom they're going to get every time. I'm consistent. Want to be at my house is so huge for me. Like, it's actually a pretty big weekend for me because I haven't had my daughter for the night, my one 17-year-old, in over 4 years. So, you know, my message tonight is, you know, be of service. I try to give back. If my crazy story, you know, I could go from what I went to, which was somewhat kind of successful, to living in the street and turn it around, then anyone can. Because, you know, you turn that will over to God and He takes over. And do your work. I worked harder to not do the work than I actually do doing the work. Because I was going to do it the easier, softer way, right? And now, it's just part of my life. I've made AA. I have sober friends. I do sober, fun things. I have my kids in my life. I have a job I semi-enjoy. And life is really good and just gets better when I hear people with 79 days. I just, like, it gets so much better. Like, just keep on because you have so much to look forward to, right? Thank you for having me tonight. It's a privilege to even be asked and to be in this group with people with so much sobriety. And, you know, give back, do your work, and, you know, turn your will to God. Thank you.
Let's give Chris another thanks. I believed you or something. That's weird. Good job. So we're going to take a quick 10-minute break before we go on to the next section with our main speaker. So take 10 minutes. Okay, and just to let you guys know, there are some seats up here does anybody wants to move closer before we get started, because we are going to get started. Okay, I'm Elliot, I'm an alcoholic. It is my privilege, once again, to introduce our speaker tonight. He came all the way from Carson. He's got 12 years, 8 months, and was it 12 days? That. He's got that. He's got today for sure, right? I'd like to introduce Danny D. of Carson, California.
Hi, everybody. I'm Danny. I'm an alcoholic. Everybody's still kind of in a food coma, huh? They're doing the countdown. People are like, tri-tip. Anyway, I love these signs right here, especially this one. This is all I was ever thinking about when I was getting loaded. My next one. I want my next one. Never in the moment, never right here, never, you know, what alcohol robbed me of. Right here, right now. It's tough to be right here, right now. Always thinking about what's next. What's coming up next. First, I'd like to apologize to the young people that I see sitting up front here before I start talking for the things I'm about to say. That this talk comes kind of with a mature audience warning. Okay? Although I won't use any foul language, there are some crazy things we might talk about. Because we have a colorful past, don't we? Uh-oh, wait, this is Bill's iPad's up here for the Zoom. How you guys doing in Zoom land? You guys doing all right? Hello? Oh, look, he's also getting, I noticed that Bill's been getting a lot of cookies right here on his iPad. Here's one from Cialis that's still sitting there. I'll get rid of it for you, Bill. All right. All right, so if you came for a good old-fashioned kind of serious AA talk, this is not going to be it. I like having a good time. Can you guys hear me okay? Okay. I don't need to raise my voice. This is good, right? Okay. My favorite line in the Big Book is on page 132 of the Big Book. It says, "We absolutely insist on enjoying life." Now, when I was being held down by 9 cops about to get another 5150. If you don't know what a 5150 is, it's a 72-hour involuntary hold because you become a danger to yourself and other people. When that was happening to me, I wasn't enjoying life. When I was watching my 4-year-old daughter plastered to the window, when she was 4 years old, wishing that I wouldn't drive off to the bar to spend her Christmas money at the bar. I was not enjoying life. But, Christy, where are you? Is Christy still here? Did she split? So I'd like to thank Christy for giving a nice 10-minute talk. Right? Not easy to give a 10-minute talk. And as she talked about, I don't know if you heard her mention right in the beginning, she said, I became separated from alcohol. Something had to get between alcohol and me, and it took a long time for that. So Bill wants me to talk for an hour. I don't know. Usually it's pretty easy to do, but by the way, it's 4-2 in the seventh inning Dodgers. So, my father was a colonel in the Air Force. I used to have two brothers. I'm the middle. I don't know if there's any other middles here. The middle child. I'm the scapegoat. I'm the target. Everything is my fault. Right? I had so much potential, and if only I would apply myself. And we had this thing in my house called a leather belt. And if you put your hand back there to block the belt became the belt buckle. Right? And that was the higher power in my house was my father and his belt. And right away, I thought I was born on the wrong planet and I was wearing the wrong earth suit. You know, it's what every AA speaker, you'll hear the same thing. I always felt out of place. I always felt inadequate. I always felt less than. And right away, my first earliest memory was I wanted out. Out of the car, out of the family, out of the house, out of the window, out of my body, and definitely away from you. Now, I know there's some older people here, and because young people, you never heard of this movie. There's this great movie Mickey Rourke was in and Faye Dunaway called Barfly, right? And Mickey Rourke is playing Charles Bukowski, great poet. And there's a great scene in there, and this one little scene kind of epitomizes me and the public. Because I've always thought we could use some social distancing, always. I'm way better off when you guys are over there and I'm over here. So there's this one scene where Faye Dunaway, she's in the, they're dive bar drinkers. You know those dive, I love dive bars. The only light in there was behind the bottles on the shelf, you know, that are always shaped like girls. You ever notice that? All the bottles are kind of shaped like, except the tweaker girls. Oh, yeah, I like snortable alcohol. I liked injectable alcohol, pill form alcohol, smokable alcohol, you name it, I liked it. By the way, if you're new and you didn't introduce yourself, and you've ever had some crusty old AA guy tell you after you shared about drugs saying that there's another place for you, please refer him to page 410 in our big book in the fourth edition. It's now called Acceptance is the Answer, I think, or Physician, it's Dr. Paul's story that used to be called Dr. Addict Alcoholic, where page 449 went. Acceptance is the Answer, I think that's what it's called now, because I guess World Service freaked out about the word addict, even though, you know, Bill waited until the seventh page to take a sedative. But if you're new and if you like staying up for 9 days being on carpet patrol, you hear the laughter. Now, if you're new and you hear people laughing, what they're saying is, oh, yeah, I did that. Is there anybody here who doesn't know what carpet patrol is? You back there? Oh, good. Let me tell you what it is. You've been up, like I just said, maybe a week. You're probably naked. You've got a lighter in one hand and a pipe in the other. And you're on a searching inventory of the carpet. See Dallas over there? You know, am I making this up, Dallas? No. Are you with me? And you're going to smoke anything that you can get out of that carpet to get out of right here, right now. It doesn't matter if it's up or down. I just want out. I want away from you. Because right here, right now, I'm comparing how I feel to how you look. I'm never going to be a guy like Patrick, who has a bunch of friends, a house paid off, and everybody loves him. I'm never going to be like that. Just go with it, Patrick. Just pretend. You know what I mean? How you just, I would always compare myself to the varsity jock with the perfect girl and all the veneered teeth and all that. And I'm like, I'm never going to be that guy. So I need to get out of right here, right now. Back to the bar. Faye Dunaway says to Mickey Rourke, she says, "People, don't you hate people?" And he says, "No, but I seem to feel better when they're not around." Exactly. I knew at a young age, man, everybody seems to know what to do. Everybody knows where to line up and have friends. And all I remember, I started being asked the same question that I would be asked all the way up into Alcoholics Anonymous. "What's wrong with you? Why do you do that? Why on?" And everybody sitting here, if you're an alcoholic, you have been asked that question. You have sat across from that last person left in your life who was ready to give up on you or had given up on you, and you're sitting across from them at that table again, and then you're asking you, "Why did you do it again? Why?" And if you're like me, you said, "I don't know. Because I'm a loser. I knew I was an alcoholic, I just didn't know what alcoholism was." Not until I read the doctor's opinion that said I had an allergy to alcohol, and it explained a lot. See, I thought I was a loser, right? And when I got those beatings with the belt, they came with, we have jargon, and you know, you guys have an Alana Club up here? And you go to Alana Club and it says, "But for the grace of God, easy does it, live and let live." All these spiritual sayings that they'll, you know, you're new and you're walking into the meeting, you got to walk past the greeters at the only door in the meeting. It's scary, you know what I mean? And you got your neck out like that, right, Dallas? You know, you're showing everybody your neck, you know, which really means I'm very scared. Can I please have a hug? But you can't say that, you know? So you walk in and you're just freaking out and you're telling somebody how you're freaking out and they just tell you, "Just keep coming back." And you want to choke them. You know what I mean? You want to say, "Well, what is the spiritual fundamental meaning of that?" And if they were honest, they would say, "I don't know. Somebody said it to me, and now I'm saying it to you." But anyway, in these, you know, we have all these nice little sayings, and they are nice. And when I was getting those beatings, they came with sayings too. Like, you remember this one? "Take it like a man. Quit your crying, or I'll give you something to cry about." So at an early age, I'm taught, whatever feelings you're having, don't show those here. Keep them stuffed up. Now, if you're new, you're 79 days, and you're starting to feel, you know, one minute I'm okay, and the next minute I'm freaking out. What is that? Those are called feelings.
I don't like feelings.
Those are called feelings. None of us do. That's why we drank. But now we're getting sober, and now the feelings come all the way up, and we just let them go. So anyway, a little kid, you know, so we moved around a lot. I moved to being, you know, Air Force brat. We moved around a lot, and every time we'd move, we'd get a little index card. It would say, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" Now, I never said that I would like to be a newcomer in an AA meeting. I never said that, you know. I'd like to have a sense of impending doom. I'd like to lose all my friends. I'd like to trade the love of my life for a drink. I never said that. I said I want to be a baseball player. I want to be, when I was 10 years old, I sat behind a set of drums, and for some reason I could play them. Nobody ever taught me. I could just play them. You know? And if you look around, we are some very clever people. Because to do what we have to do to keep doing it, especially like without any resources, and to keep doing it or to keep hiding it or to keep pulling it off, we're some very clever people. I'm a pretty clever guy. I can do a lot of things. I can drum, I can sing, I can play the guitar, I'm an electrician, I'm a superintendent, I can build things that can run this whole city in power. I can tattoo, I can build a Harley, but when it comes to not drinking this drink without you, I can't do it. I need you. We'll get to that. So, anyway, I was running around, running away from home a lot because I got tired of the beatings. And my first drink, 12 years old, I was living in Washington, D.C. And we went to this, you know, there's always a place right outside of school. This knob right here. No, I got it. It's okay, Bill. Hey, let's give it up for Bill. Yeah. Come on. Isn't Bill awesome? I see there's a couple tables back there, Bill, that weren't even clapping for you. Just so you know, I don't know what the deal is. I don't know. Anyway, you know how, like, wherever you took your first drink, you know, your real first drink, not the sip while you're getting your dad a beer or the little things around the table, your real first drink, it usually happened some weird place. Usually there was this place behind the school or someplace. So we had this play, an old abandoned baseball dugout. These kids, I was 12 years old. I'd been smoking Camel cigarettes for 3 years. I'd grown my hair out to piss my dad off because Air Force colonels do not like long hair. And screw him, you know. I go out there, and for 12 years of my life, I felt pretty much terrified all the time. The only tools I had was run or fight. That's all I had. Either hit you or just run away. That was it. And somebody handed me a bottle of Boone's Farm strawberry wine. You guys ever heard of that stuff? And these parts usually get a bit. You guys still in a coma? I said Boone's Farm strawberry wine. Can I get an amen? Can I get a hallelujah? I love doing that at big conferences because, you know, usually there's like a section of 300 people in the from the druggy buggies, you know, newcomers. When you get a whole room full of AA people to say amen and hallelujah, it scares newcomers. Because they just envision, we will be selling the big book at the airport tonight. Don't worry. Anyway, what was I talking about? Boone's Farm. So they handed me this bottle, probably about this tall, you know. And they're also passing around this thing. It looked like a cigarette, but they weren't smoking it like a cigarette. They were going, you know. And you want to say, excuse me, what is that? But you can't say that, Dallas. You can't say to somebody, what is that? Because then they'll know that you don't know. And then you'll be humiliated and you'll have to murder them. Right? Because I would rather murder you than be publicly humiliated. Right? So they're passing the thing around. Somebody handed me this bottle and I drank the entire bottle. Right? And when you're 12 years old, I mean, to us now, Boone's Farm, not that big of a deal. But when you're 12, you know, that did that whole, you know, that kind of like that gasoline thing, you know, that it does. And I was, and then that thing happened. That thing happened like our book talks about. It suddenly, I wasn't afraid. It was like I exhaled for the first time in my life. I felt taller, funny, handsome, you know. And the only thing that was different was I had alcohol in me. And then I started throwing up. You know, it was that kind of throw up, you know, where you just like, you think your socks are going to come up too, you know. But I remember thinking while throwing up, if I'm not dead after this, I will be doing this tomorrow. While throwing up, you know, holding onto the fence. And then so I'm standing there covered in strawberry chunks of wine. Oh, really? I just love that when I talk about certain things and people go, like, watch this. How many people have sniffed something off of a public bathroom before? Come on. But isn't it funny when we get here and we get like like 20 days sober, we're like, is that cage-free water? Is that vegan water? Like, dude, you were on carpet patrol last week. I don't know if you guys ever heard my buddy Doug R. Tell his story. When Doug tells his story, he talks about, you know, how, I don't know if you ever had to like crawl from the living room to your bedroom to get to bed because you're so drunk you can't walk. Some people call it pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I call it going to bed, right? And Doug was crawling with his fifth of old granddad to bed, and as he stood up and went to drink it, he dropped it and it fell, and although there was still, you know, when a fifth is laying on its side, even with the bottle open, it's shaped in a way, there was still some in there, but Doug noticed some spilled on the comforter. So he picked it up automatically and started sucking on it. Like Maggie from The Simpsons, you know? And I love when he says, you know, his voice went, that ain't right, you know? And that, I had that voice all the time, man. But it's so funny when we think about the times we've woken up in our own urine and vomit, you know, but then we still hear in the, around the me, ew. I never want to forget that. I never want to forget, you know, when Patrick was talking about when Bill and Bob went to see Bill Dodson, Bill Dean, alcohol number three, who is the man in the bed. I never want to forget what it was like to be the man in the bed. Because if I do, I don't think I'll make it back to that bed, you know? So anyway, I was standing there covered in vomit, and this thing, that, you know, they were passing that thing around. Remember they were passing that thing that looked like a cigarette? And they're on. And it wasn't like, you know, the weed they have today, man. It's like NASA is growing, you know? And like one hit will cure pancreatic cancer or something. It was like, I don't know, do you remember the weed we had? You used to have to get a record album and clean the seeds out of it. And it all had seeds, right? And so as it's coming around, I'm thinking, well, I'm going to do whatever they're doing better than they're doing it. Right? So I had to take a big, giant hit, and my first hit of marijuana had a seed right in the end of it. It was like an exploding cigarette. It popped, stuck to my forehead, and we were all just looking at it. My smoldering, still scar right there. And I'm covered in chunks of my own vomit, smoldering. Best day of my life. It was absolutely the best day of my life, because like my sponsor says, it was the first time ever that I was comfortable standing where I was standing, doing what I was doing with the people I was with. The first time ever. It was phenomenal. And I found out what I'm going to do the rest of my life. I will ingest things. If I can get enough things into me, then I can get out of right here, right now, where I'm terrified and afraid. So, the highlights. Diana, wake up. She's on Zoom. She fell asleep on Zoom. Oh, I just woke her up. I love how everybody, too, just has like a still picture of just their name. Like, when we come back to meetings, I think I'm going to get like an appliance box and just have a picture of me looking nice, and I'll be in the box. I won't be dressed nice or nothing like that. My hair will be all screwed up, and I'll be texting and eating under there. What do you... I'm just kidding. Hey, Diana's laughing now. And there's Kathy. Hi, Kathy. How you doing? Nice to see you. All right. Isn't it nice to be part of something, Kathy? Kathy, have you ever been on carpet patrol? No? All right. So we moved to San Antonio, Texas. My father became the head of the Inspector General's office, and that's where my favorite drink was Southern Comfort, improperly named. Nobody ever was comfortable when I drank Southern Comfort, and I couldn't get enough of that stuff in me. And when I was 17, I went to a big boy jail, and when I came out, my entire family moved to the Philippines. Usually, I know this is the only place where people will laugh at that. Like, if this was the Kiwanis Club, and you said I was 17, and my family moved to the... across, out of the country, people would go, oh my, not here. The people here were like, let's try to kill yourself. And on the same page that I told you about, that we absolutely insist on enjoying life, on page 132 it says that we think that laughter and cheerfulness are useful. Because if you're new and you're coming here and you don't see us having fun, you're not going to stay. Why would you stay? You know? This is where you can start having fun. Anyway. So there I was, 17, I had a set of drums that didn't match because I'm, you know, a drug addict and an alcoholic. All my drums that were from pawn shops, and I don't know if there's any other liars here tonight. Yeah? And the people not raising their hand, your shoulder hurts. Right? You know, I don't, like the book talks about this. The book talks about where we can no longer differentiate what... whatever that word, it's a big word, decipher, that we can't tell the difference between reality and the false, right? And I used to lie so much that I have fond memories of shit that never even happened to me. You know what I mean? I don't know about you. You know, like when you're telling somebody some BS story, and in the middle, while you're telling them, you're thinking, did I do that? Anyway, you know? I mean, I used to, because I didn't know my family anymore. I didn't see them anymore. So they're looking at something good online over there. What do you guys got going over there? Try to be here. You're here right now. Nah.
Did you just say me?
There's a recording device here. I said the F word, recording. So anyway, I forgot what I was talking about. Anyway, I remember that this is the true part of the story. This is how I came to California. Rod Stewart was looking for a drummer in 1979. So I put my drums in the bottom of a Greyhound. Remember when you took the Greyhound bus, there was a thing on the bottom where you put your stuff in there. So I put all my drums in there. Who's winning the game?
Dodgers 6-5.
Bam. What inning?
Yeah.
Awesome. 6-5. That's too close.
Yeah, well, they Tampa Bay went ahead 5-4. The Dodgers came back and scored 2.
Hallelujah. Amen. So anyway, I came out to California with my drums to be the drummer for Rod Stewart. That's the true part of the story. But when I got to the bus station downtown in the middle of the night in L.A., there was a pawn shop that happened to be open next to the bus station. So once again, all my hopes and dreams went into my left arm, and I drank them all up. But I told so many people that I played drums for Rod Stewart that still, to this day, when Hot Legs comes on the radio, I admire my own drumming. I have showed up to many an audition without drums and told them, imagine a drum set. It's like showing up to an attorney's office saying, imagine I've already passed the bar. I really did that. So music, it became hard to make a living in music without instruments, so I got into the electrical field, and which 41 years later, it's held me in good stead. So a lot of crazy things happened. I didn't know where my family was. I had no moral compass. I had no anchors. I didn't have a single soul in the world. And whenever I get to this part of the story, I think about, do you remember this movie, Trading Places, with Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd? There's this part of the movie where he gets, somebody bails him out of jail, and he didn't know who, and he comes out of jail, and he starts to turn this way, and he starts to turn that way, and he realizes it doesn't matter which way, because he doesn't have any place to go. And that's where I was. So I'm 22 years old, I'm living in San Francisco, I have holes in the front of my teeth, I have mats in my hair, I'm wearing everything I own, I'm sleeping in doorways, and the only thing I can do to get a drink, I can do one of two things. I can either run into the liquor store. I was back to drinking that wine that had no grapes in it. You know, it was called MD 2020 or Night Train. It's like turpentine. They didn't even put it in the refrigerator. They kept it on the shelf next to the mayonnaise. And I just run in, 79 cents. And I just run in and just steal it and just run out. Or I would go to a bar. There was a time where people used to be able to smoke in a bar. Do you remember those days?
Yeah.
And did you know, have you ever been out to drink with a normie? There's nothing stranger than a normal person, is there? You know when you watch them and you've been having like a two-hour lunch and they're still on the same drink and it's like halfway and you're like, what is wrong with this person? Jesus. Have you ever felt like that? What is it? And did you know that there are these same people think that a cigarette butt floating in a drink is an undrinkable beverage? Can you believe that? Rookies, right? So I would go into the bar about, 10 minutes to 2, last call, and there's this magical place at the bar where the little brass thing is where the waitress goes to get service. You go over there. She does this wonderful thing for alcoholics. She is being of service. She is going out to the tables, getting the unfinished drinks. I've never had an unfinished drink, but there are those that leave them. And then she goes and collects them all for us. And then she brings them back to this spot. It's like magic, right? And there they are. And I'm there with I think it was a Tupperware or a beer mug with the handle off. And I had two, one inside of the other one. Oh, don't get ahead of me. And I would take all the drinks and I would pour them in there. And they had whatever, Flo Loogies or cigarette butt, whatever. And I'd take them out back, and then Terry's making that face, look. Yeah. Did you ever snort stuff off a bathroom toilet before? Never. No. But you have snorted some stuff. Yeah. Anyway, I'd take it out back and I'd put my t-shirt over one empty one and I'd pour it through and strain all the stuff out of it. Some people call that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I call it a Long Island tea. Genius. You know, and when I was doing stuff like that, when I was taking the toilet off the floor and turning it upside down because the only syringe was in there, I was never ever did I think, Jesus, Danny, what are you doing? It was like I had to get to that next get out of right here, right now. And if you're new, you have this thing built in where you're looking for the differences. Your sponsor has told you before, go to the meeting and look for the similarities, not the differences. Because we have this physical allergy and this mental obsession, and we also have this thing that's looking for the difference. The beast is looking. My sponsor's name is Earl, and his sponsor's name was Donald Madden. And somewhere along our lineage, we started calling the alcoholism the beast. Because that's what it is, right? The beast. Even though in my brain, I don't want to get off this topic. If you're new and you're sitting there thinking, I never did that, don't think about the toilet coming off and going upside down. Think about the desperation, the loneliness, the fear, the anxiety, because we all can relate to that. We all come here needing a way out, which was what our book was going to be called before they decided. And then it was going to, you know what it was going to be called next? Does anybody know? 100 Men. And then the first woman walked in Alcoholics Anonymous, killed that. And do you know, Patrick probably tell you how we got our name, right? Some guy sitting in a meeting saying Anonymous Alcoholics. And that's how we got our name. But the name of our book was going to be called A Way Out. And if you're new, we need a way out of that madness where, like on page 82, it talks about, I'm a tornado roaring through the lives of everybody that's ever cared about me. Inconsiderate thoughts. I don't care about them because of what I have to do what I need to do, to get what I need to get out of right here, right now. Because I'm afraid. Because you take away everything and that last underlying current that's left in me is fear. I'm either coming to you from love or fear. There is nothing else. Right? It's either I'm afraid I'm going to lose what I have or not get what I want. That's it. So, those are the things I used. That's what I was doing. I'm living on the street. I'm only 22 years old, and I'm too scared to kill myself. And I'm thinking, well, it's never going to happen to me. My life is never going to be good. Never. It doesn't matter anymore. You know? And I carried a bullet around in my pocket for my father's head because I hated him. And I was hiding in a phone booth. We used to have these machines, bro, that you could call people. Did you know that? You could call Patrick. There was a time you could call him, and he wouldn't even know you called. Phone would just ring and ring and ring. He'd be out eating his dinner, not taking pictures of it, making you look at it, right? And if you wanted to see Bill's cat sleeping, you had to go to Bill's house, knock on the door, and ask him to see his cat. Facebook joke. So I'm hiding in a phone booth because I can't make eye contact with people. Because if you look me in the eye, the only time you look people in the eye is when you're trying to manipulate them. You have to look people in the eye when you're manipulating them, because if you don't, they'll think you're trying to manipulate them. But other than that, I couldn't look you in the eye, because if I looked you in the eye, I knew you saw right into my soulless body that I... Don't worry, the story has a happy ending. I kind of get bummed out at it, too. But, so I'm hiding in a phone booth. I'm hiding in a phone booth in Civic Center Park in San Francisco. It's 7 o'clock. Everybody's all fresh and rosy-cheeked and going to those things called jobs, you know? And somebody put it... Now, I've been to reform schools, mental centers, jail, psychiatrists, psychologists. No one ever mentioned Alcoholics Anonymous to me, not one time. But in this payphone, somebody put a bumper sticker that said, got a drinking problem? Call Alcoholics Anonymous. So I called. Collect. Without a coin.
Alcoholics Anonymous, this is Judy. Can I help you?
And all I could say to Judy was, I'm not in charge of the machine. I was 22 years old. I was probably iodine colored from just, all I ate and drank was wine. You know, I looked like probably I was 50 at the time. But beaten. And I was either yelling at you, or just absolutely, you know how we're either assassin or victim. Nowhere in the middle. I think There are some groups in AA that have given the name to the ego, His Majesty the Baby. I love that. It's so perfect. I'm not a baby! Are you guys still with me? Some people are going, what the hell is he talking about? I don't know, just pretend like you know. So I called, she said, do you think Danny, I don't know if you've ever been to San Francisco, but the Civic Center Park is here. She said, can you make it to Bush and Golf Street for a meeting? Which is like this. And that's a long way if there's not a drink at the other end of that, right? I mean, I'll roller skate on the 99 freeway in the rain for a cocktail. But to walk that far for this thing called a meeting, I got nowhere else to go. Now I walk into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, if you'd have told me, Bill, were you a blackout drinker? Me too. Isn't it great? I'm here, I'm not here, I'm here, I'm not here, you know? You know, have you ever walked into a bar that you thought was the first time, and the bartender says, excuse me, you, out! And you're like, what? Apparently I've been to this bar before, right? Apparently all this broken shit behind the bar was me last week. I just don't remember. That happened to me a lot. Now, I thought if I had walked into this AA meeting and they ran up and said, dude, out, or five guys wanted to drag me outside and we all had to, and I had to get beat up, I know how to do those things. But what I did not know how to do was receive a hug from a big guy. That's what happened. I'm standing there. I look like a chick on speed, you know, like a size nun. Hear the laughing? Yeah, they think that, you know how you think you look cute too? You put like that one leg in front of the other one. You're kind of rocking. I know where I am. I'm about to tell you. I know they got some tweakers out here. There's some tweakers out here, right? Oh, yeah. I love the laughter. So I'm thinking I look good, you know? You know, I'm distorted. And this big guy is like a nose guard on a football team. He sees me. And I see him see me. And I think, uh-oh, I've been here before. Here he comes. He's coming. Okay. Right? And he says, I love you. And he puts his arms around me. And I said, dude, don't ever hug me, man. But he hugged me again. I was completely powerless. And so I didn't know what anybody said. I didn't know what happened, but all I knew was nobody made me leave, and there was something about it. That's all I knew. There was something about it. And so the next day I drank, and I thought the price of admission to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was a hug from a dude, and it was almost too much. I had anxiety all day about it. And I'd go there, and every night that guy would come over, and he'd hug me. And 3 weeks in a row, that big guy would hug me. And one night I came in, and he didn't come over. And he just stood there talking to these other guys. And I was like, hey. I had been transformed from don't ever hug me to where's my hug in 3 weeks. Right? Because, you know, AA doesn't teach me how to be spiritual and loving. Anybody that's ever held a little baby in their hand knows that we came here. I believe that I came here that way. If you've ever held a little, you hold a little baby, right? Did you have a little baby? Did you ever have a little baby? You, right? Yeah. The first time you held your firstborn, right? When you held your baby, did you think, now there's a liar. Hey, turn to the side. Look, he's going to love Oxycontin. Look at that. No! You thought, there's a perfect little, everybody's happy. It's a beautiful little ray of light. And when I held my daughter for the first time, I thought, I must have been like that. I don't remember it. I came here spiritual. But what happened was along the way, I adopted self and fear and ego. Right? And AA doesn't teach me how to be spiritual, but it gives me 12 principles that teaches me how to get rid of fear. And if I get rid of fear, it's as simple as this. If I get rid of fear, what's left? Love, man. Love. That's it. That's it. So anyway, I kept going to meetings. I started 8 years of I sponsor myself. I don't know if you've ever seen anybody like that at your meetings. It's called untreated alcoholism. You know, you know when you have steering committee meetings or something and there's somebody that wants to argue for 3 hours about what kind of cup we should have? Don't ask that guy to sponsor you if you're new. If you want to find a spot, look, see how happy Bill is. You see him running around all smiling and stuff. You see the fun people. Patrick looks pretty happy and comfortable inside of his own skin. If you're new and you don't have a sponsor, you go up to one of these people at the end of the meeting, these happy, nice people that seem to be comfortable and seem to be navigating through life happily, and ask them, how did you do that? How did you do that? Right? Because this isn't about stopping. We've all stopped. Dallas, you stopped before. It's your second time, right? How many people in here have been in and out, in and out, in and out? Huh? Me too. I'm the guy that couldn't get sober. I'm the guy that could not get sober that everybody gave up on. I should not be standing here right now. Right? But don't give up. Don't give up on yourself, and don't give up on people that you're sponsoring that keep going in and out, in and out, in and out. Don't give up. Yeah, it's not about stopping, it's about staying stopped. We interrupt this part of the talk to talk about the circle and the triangle. I know that perhaps you've seen it. In 1955, I know that Patrick's a bit of a historian. He kind of got me on the historian kick when he started with the beautiful story about H&I, which I love. In 1955, if you wonder where the circle and the triangle came from, it's an ancient symbol. We didn't invent it. I believe the Masons, the Freemasons, now own it because we didn't copyright it. But in 1955, it appeared on our second edition on the dust cover, and they unveiled it at the 1955 convention. We adopted it, which is a nice word for it. We stole it. Ta-da! Right? And it's an ancient symbol for mind, body, and spirit. Therein lies the balance that I seek as a whole human being. And the first side of the triangle for us is unity. Unity is the body. I bring it to a meeting. Like I said, I can do a lot of things by myself pretty good, but I cannot stay sober without you. I need you. And just like the traditions, the first word in the steps is we, and the first tradition says that my recovery depends upon how well do I get along with you, that our common welfare should come first, right? So unity is the body. I bring it to a meeting. But it ain't about just stopping. I got to stay stopped. I got to be able to go outside my house, come in contact with a lot of people, and not have to make amends to every single one of them and not have my life fold over on itself again. How do I do that? Well, second side of the triangle. Recoveries of the mind, I work the 12 steps. And when Franklin W., our first circuit speaker, ever who went around, he was from Olive Branch, Mississippi. He asked Bill, what is the true essence of Alcoholics Anonymous in the most simple form? Bill told him the six words that we all know today. Trust God, clean house, help others, right? Now, I was talking to a guy on the phone about 3 weeks ago, this new kid, and he goes, dude, I can't get past that trust word. I have a trust issue. Really, bro? Aren't you the guy that went behind that Chevron station to have that guy give you a little bindle of blow? And you ran home. You didn't put it in a CSI Miami chemistry kit to see if it changed from red to blue. You just went. You trusted that guy. When you get in an elevator, you don't need to inspect the cables to see if they're all right. When you're driving, you're not looking in the rearview mirror every time you stop to see the car behind you stop. You trust that that car is stopping. So therefore, you can trust. Amen? Hallelujah?
Hallelujah.
Okay. All right. You feel me, Bill? Are you feeling me? I asked this guy the other day, you feel me? He goes, nah. So I rubbed myself all over him. I said, you feel me now? Unity is the body, I bring it to a meeting. Recovery is of the mind, I work the 12 steps. Trust God. So I'm going to trust a God that I may or may not believe, right? So I come in here and I believe that Earl believes, right? I believe that he believes. And then I trust this God and I turn my will and my life, my thoughts and my actions over to him. I'm going to try to do what my grandma always wanted me to do. The right thing. Be polite. Be nice. Don't. Just don't. Some of the best advice I've ever got is just shut up, Danny. My best contrary action is, if you're new, you hear that a lot too. Contrary actions. We don't do what we would like to do and we do what we don't want to do. Right? My best contrary action is just don't. We talk about it. Pause when agitated. There are people doing life in Corcoran right now wish they could have paused when agitated. You go and visit them, don't you? Right? There are some people in there go, man, I wish I would have walked around the block before I did that. So recovery, trust God. Now I got a clean house. Now I got to go and stand in front of these people that I have harmed and say, I'm very, very sorry for the way I treated you. I'd like to make things right. What can I do to make things right? Here's your money. I'm going to pay you back $5 a week until I'm dead, until it's paid back. And I'm going to stop acting like that. And now I'm going to trust God, clean house. Now I'm going to help others. So what do you win? What do you win if you work the 12 steps? What do you win if you're a GSR? What do you get if you go to a meeting for 10 years and set up the chairs? What do you get if you do this over and over and over? What do you win? You know what you win, Terry? You get to walk outside of a meeting. You know, right before the meeting starts, you guys have a real social meeting, typically like on a Friday or Saturday. Everybody's all, and it's really loud before the meeting. And new people, they can't be in that room. Do you remember what it was like being new? Oh, my God. Really? They're going to ask you stuff like, how are you? I'm dying of a hopeless state of mind and body. How about you? So here's what you win. You get to, while everybody's in there chit-chatting, you get to walk out and look for that person that's about 200 yards from the meeting by themselves, waiting for the meeting to start, so they can slip into the back of the meeting because they're scared. And you get to walk out there and say, hey, how you doing? Like from about 10 feet away. Hey, how are you? You know, like in working with others, there's a great paragraph on page 91. It starts with, see your man alone. See your man alone. You know, asking somebody in the middle of a group of people in AA or from across the room, how many days do you have now, Danny? That is not unity. That's division. That's going to, and I know you see it all the time. Right? You don't start with that kind of conversation around other people. But you go out there and you ask them, hey man, do you have a place to sit? Do you need anything? And you strike up a little conversation. So that guy knows at least one person in the meeting. And then maybe after the meeting, you go see him and ask him and remember his name. Bobby, how was that meeting for you? That's what you win in Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? Can I get an amen?
Amen.
You know... So anyway, 8 years of I sponsor myself. On my 8th anniversary of untreated alcoholism, I took a drink. I'm checking the time. Okay. On January 20th, 1993, I went to a meeting where they gave out medallions. I stood in front of the podium. It was one of those backwards meetings where they do the participation first and then the speaker. I took my little chip. I was one of those big giant dudes that the only person that thinks it looks good is another big giant dude, you know? I had my Harley parked in the doorway, daring people not to touch it. I took my medallion and I said, AA doesn't work. I can't stand every one of you. And I invited any dude in the room out to a fight out there. And I was just miserable. I was just miserable. And the truth is that I didn't know what AA was. I had never had a big book. I had never had a sponsor. I'd never done anything for anybody without an agenda. So I took a drink that night. And I stayed out for 15 years. And every single day, I wanted to be sober. But within 2 hours of that day, there would be an empty bottle at the end of my arm. And I didn't know how it happened. Oof. Whew. Dark, darkness. Lots of terrible things happened. When OJ was happening, I was in a hospital bed with two shattered calcaneus bones. You know what those are, don't you? The calcaneus. It's the hardest bone in your body. It's your heel bones. I flew off of something, you know, and back in Glendale Adventist again with that catheter in me. Knowing that there was another way and just could not. And I don't know, around 1995, 96, 97, somewhere in there, I was in this great band. I became from a drummer to a front man. I was a singer in this phenomenal band. And I ruined that band like I ruined everything else. You know how it says the alcoholic, he has, what is it? A perfect genius for getting tight at the exact wrong moment. Page 21 or 22, somewhere in there. Right? That, you know that job you're always dying for? The girl you always wanted to go out with? And there you were. Like the book says, boiled as an owl, all lit up again, right? So if somebody was handing me the brass ring, you ever heard of that saying, Dallas? The brass ring is when somebody's handing you the opportunity of a lifetime. And every time somebody would hand me that, you would think I'm just smacking it right out of their hand, right? And I, I, I had reached the low of all I had was a red-nosed pit bull named Brooklyn, a Honda Civic with no windshield, and my hand tools. That was a real catch. And I had the beast on me, man, that just would not, I just could not stop. I could not stop. I wanted to stop. I meant business. I really, if you ask me, why do you keep drinking, Danny? Why? And I go, I don't know. Why don't you tell me? Why? And I had this girlfriend named Vicky Smart, Victoria Smart. God bless her. She passed away. After 14 years of sobriety, she had a distended liver that she came into AA with, and they put her on pain meds, and she crossed that line, and she died of a Vicodin overdose. God bless Vicky Smart. Vicky let me live with her, and she took care of me and my dog. And I was one of those people that said AA didn't work. If you ever go online to look at people too, they'll talk about us like we're this cult, you know. If this is a cult, I'm so glad I'm in a cult. You know, this cult of all we care about is wanting people to get sober and do good. Dude, Dallas, all I want for you is to have a building on it with your name on it and have 20 sponsees to know the magic of what it's like to see the light go on in another guy's eyes, to see hope in another guy. That's the buzz. It's a bigger buzz than black tar heroin, meth, Gilby's gin, and everything put together. Am I right?
Amen.
When you sponsor somebody and you get to see that person go from this broken, damaged person standing up there and sponsoring another guy, and they call you and they say, Patrick, I got my first sponsee. What should I have him do? Like a little baby penguin, you know? We're like penguins. We have a lot in common with penguins, man. I don't know if you know that. Penguins, you ever seen the March of the Penguins? They can survive through minus 70 degrees in Antarctica. You know how? With each other. That's the only way. Without each other, they die. When a new one comes, they're like, okay, you ever heard? They say it in here. Get in the middle. All right, get a commitment. All right, you're a literature guy, okay. And then when you get a little time, okay, now go back to the outside and go get a new guy. They're like penguins. We're penguins. You look at it how you need to look at it. I'll look at it how I need to look at it. I like to marvel in the ordinary. Because all I ever used to do was notice the shittiest things in the world. Find fault with everything. You know, I found out if you think about bad things, you feel bad. But guess what? If you think good things, hold the phone, I feel good. It's just like that one where they go, you know, if you don't take a drink, you won't get drunk. Genius! Remember when your sponsor told you that? It's like, dude, how am I ever going to stay sober? He goes, well, we'll just do it one day at a time. And you didn't know it was a bumper sticker and we all said that. You thought your sponsor made that up. You're like, that's the smartest guy in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, yeah, one day at a time, man. That's my guy right there. And then you find out, what? Okay. So, what was I talking about? Before the Penguins.
Service,
yeah, all that. Oh, Vicky. I was, you know, I had turned into one of those people, AA doesn't work. People say, hey man, don't I know you from AA? AA, yeah, AA don't work. I don't know AA. What is AA? AA is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and like they talk about, the first 164 pages of the big book that ends in a vision for you. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. We're named after that book. And I tell people it don't work because of some of the people in AA. Just like when we look at religions and stuff, and we meet somebody that's in a certain religion and go, see? No. That's man. That's a flawed human. So I'm living with Vicky. Anyway, shorten this story. Vicky used to pull around every night, and at the end of my work day, I'm working as an electrician, work was the glue. I could work. I'm a worker bee. Work makes perfect sense to me. I'm a union electrician. There's a code book. I know who and what I am and what I'm supposed to do at work. It's getting off work that's a problem. No code book. But we have one now. It's that book I just talked about. There's a code book. And every night, so at the end of my day, I would sit out there and I would drink 10 king-size Coronas, 200 ounces of Corona, and I'd smoke that NASA weed, a quarter ounce of Kush, and I eat all the Klonopin. You ever heard of Klonopin? It's like Valium with a cape. It's super Valium. Right? And that's what it took me to pass out at night. And three nights, four nights a week, Vicki would start her car, pull around and go, I'm going to a meeting tonight, Danny. Would you like to go? And I'd tell her, tell him, F you, Danny says hi. Look, if I had known how to do column work, I would have said, Vicki, I'm sorry. I can't go with you tonight. You see, I have a resentment towards Alcoholics Anonymous. Here's the 75 reasons why. It affects all seven areas of my life. And if I could really be honest and in touch with my feelings, is the reason I can't go is because I'm afraid I will never know what permanent sobriety is, and I will never be accepted by Alcoholics Anonymous. But I didn't know how to say that, so it just came out. And one night, Vicki pulled around, and she stopped the car, got out, opened the door, and she said, Danny, you get in the car tonight, or I'm not feeding your dog, you're not sleeping with me, I'm not washing your clothes, and you can't live here anymore. Now I might be dying of a disease, but I'm not stupid. So I get in the car, and I'm going, you've heard it before, the last meeting I'm ever going to go to. This is my last meeting. Are you still with me, Diana? Hi, Diana. The Zoom thing's pretty cool, you gotta admit, man. We find a way to get together. You can't keep us apart from each other. Pandemic or not, we will be together as Alcoholics Anonymous. Amen?
Yes.
There you go. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.
I spoke in Alabama once. At the end of every sentence, and people in Alabama, every sentence first starts with, well, and it ends with, Roll Tide. For 2 years after I went there, I was saying that. Anyway. No. What was I? Oh. So Vicki says, okay, so I'm going to go to one more meeting. Now, I don't know if you, has anybody ever been to L.A.? I know there's some long sobriety here. Has anybody ever been to the meeting in Beverly Hills called, when it was in the 90s, called Rodeo? It's one of those meetings, you know, like, you know when you're in treatment and they take you to these really rich zip codes and it's the only time you're ever going to go into those neighborhoods? And, like, the people in the meetings are really pissed off that you're there and you have to listen to rich people problems? You know what I'm talking about? You're, like, wondering how am I going to keep from blowing my brains out or how am I going to pay my rent? And you have to listen to shit like, I'm so mad at the housekeeper. She taught Ethan a Spanish word. And you're like, shut up, you know? But you got to act better than you feel, you know? So she takes me to this meeting called Rodeo. I'm not exaggerating. 700 people, all veneered teeth, tan in the winter, 9-digit salary, Dolce & Gabbana, Jimmy Choo, and they're all doing better than you. And I'm Pigpen. I have this 2 handfuls of loser balloons that I, you know, remember when you buy your kid a balloon and it's like $5, so you tie it to their wrist so they can't just let it go? I felt like I had these balloons that were giant and they said loser. And everyone knew when I walked in the room, there he is. There's the guy that can't stay sober. I'm ashamed to walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't put 2 days together. They're going to ask me again, how long do you have now, Danny? And I hate you for asking me that because I can't do it. And I know I'm never going to do it. I'm constitutionally incapable of, I can't give up. I can't give up. So, I'm sitting in the back of the room, all the way second to the last row. Vicki's got me in here. And there's a guy right there, and I'm sitting there with my arms crossed to my last meeting, and this guy named Earl H. gets up and starts telling his story. And something happened. I can't tell you what he said, but all I know is he might as well have been up there saying, I felt like you felt, Danny, and I've been where you've been, and I'm telling you that you can do it. And I heard a little voice like in that movie, The Field of Dreams, maybe. And I asked the guy next to me, what'd you say? He said, I didn't say nothing. I never heard my own voice in my head say something positive. My voice never had anything good to say about me or you. Screw all of you, screw this, what's the use? Of course it's fucked up. It's going to be, of course it is. I deserve this. I'm a loser. And I heard maybe. And maybe is a beautiful word for people like us. Maybe you don't have to die. Maybe you get to be Shayla's father. Maybe you get to matter. maybe your life will make a difference on other people's life. Do you remember that movie? I know I'm making a lot of movie references now. You remember that movie, The Bucket List? It was the first time I ever had, it was my second spiritual experience. I'm going to end with my first spiritual experience. My second spiritual experience, the only higher power I believed in, I believed that Earl believed. Right? And I had just had my heart broken. This woman that I was with, after 20 days of being married, left me. And I was in the fetal position, crying in the living room. And the bucket list was on. And they got to this part of the movie where they were sitting on top of the flat part of the pyramids. And Morgan Freeman, if you don't know the movie, Morgan Freeman is trying to convince, he's trying to enlighten Jack Nicholson, who only believes in money and himself. And Morgan Freeman believes in a higher power. And he's trying to enlighten him. And Morgan Freeman is saying to him, ancient Egyptians believed that when you got to the gates of heaven, you were asked two questions. And I kind of wiped the snot off my face and I kind of paid attention. And he said, the first question is, do you think that you've ever experienced true joy? And the second one is, do you think that your life has ever brought joy to another person's life? And I felt, I'm feeling it right now. I can't explain it. When I was new and if you told the story, I'd have stood up in the back of the room and said, you're a jackass. But I felt this. Like, you know when you go to the sports games and they got those big, giant sponge hands, the finger? I felt a hand that big on my back. And I just felt, Danny, I got you. It was this thing, I can't explain it. I can't explain it. It's like chocolate cake. You can't tell somebody what chocolate cake tastes like. You just got to go, here, taste this, you know? You got to find yours. So at that meeting, I heard that maybe, you know, and I asked that man to sponsor me, and for 15 years, Earl did not give up on me. I obviously didn't stay sober. I couldn't stay sober, but Earl didn't give up on me. Every time I ended up at L.A. County Jail, Earl, do you know how, hey, Pat, have you ever been in the old men's county jail? You know, Earl waited 7 hours to see me for a 4-minute visit. He didn't talk about AA. He showed me Alcoholics Anonymous, right? When I was having the catheter taken out of me again at Glendale of Venice, AA was there in the form of Earl. He just didn't give up on me. He just loved me. He just kept loving me. And I asked him a couple weeks ago on a Zoom meeting, how come you never gave up on me? How come, man? And he said, I just couldn't be that guy that you could say that AA doesn't work. I wasn't going to be that guy. And he just kept loving me. And it was the only thing that was going to work for a guy like me. Kindness. Tenderness. He didn't fire me as a sponsee because I didn't, you know, set up the chairs or not call him at 2:13 on a Tuesday. You know? Firing people. What is that? My job is to extend the hand. Right? Earl made it very clear to me in my early sobriety, Danny, when you get this thing, recovery from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, when you get this, if you don't turn around and give it to another guy, you've been a complete waste of time. I was like, that's kind of harsh. But I get it. We sponsor sponsees. That's what we do. And we sponsor sponsors. I'm sponsoring a future sponsor. So anyway, I asked him to sponsor me. For 15 years, he didn't give up on me. And one day, good, I'm out of time. One day, February 18th, 2008, I knew I was done. I had been beaten to that state of reasonableness. Like it says on page 30, I finally conceded to my innermost self. I finally tapped out. And I used to MMA fight. I used to box. And if you guys know what UFC fighting is, maybe you can relate to this. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we need to concede. If you play chess, you know how to play chess? When you concede, you lay your king over like that. It means I give up. And we are people that had a hard time giving up, right? And in MMA, if they get you in an arm bar, if you don't tap, that arm's popping, right? And I refused to tap out with my alcoholism, and I ended up keep going to institutions and keep, you know, having my life fold over on itself till finally I said, like the book says, beaten into a state of reasonableness, I'm done. It's a great question to ask yourself if you're new. Are you done? Are you done? I hope you're done. Please be done. If you don't think you're done, let us be done for you. Okay? So, yeah. So I kicked in my first meetings, and I started going to, this is how I'll close with these two little stories about my sponsor. I love my sponsor so much, man. It's the most important relationship I've ever had in my life, you know. He's taught me, so, this goes so past not drinking and using. This goes about, you know, how can I be a kind man? How can I be a gentle person? How can I be accountable? How can I be a man of ethics and integrity? You know, how can I be that guy? How can I be a guy that can brush his teeth and have the medicine cabinet closed so I can look at myself? My sponsor taught me all those things because you taught him that. My sponsor didn't teach me anything. He didn't have any of those things until Donald taught him, until Norm Alpe taught him, until Chuck C. taught him, until Bill W. taught him, right? Just one man not giving up on another man. So I'm going in and out of meetings, you know, and going to meetings. Now I'm going to meetings, and I got this maybe thing. Okay, maybe, and I believe that Earl believes, and that's all I got. And I'm sitting in my home group, my home group. What is a home group? It's a meeting you go to so much that when you don't go, people notice you're not there. That's what a home group is. If you want a home group, you just come to a meeting and go, Terry, you go, this is my home group. Okay, fine. That's all it takes. I claim this planet, the name of Mars. Bam! Home group. Right? And so this group, it was all these really nice, rich people that knew how to talk to each other without being high. Super weird, right? How do you chit-chat without being drunk? And I'm sitting in the room, and it's one of those meetings. You have meetings like this. You can't raise your hand. You got to be called on. You know those meetings?
Yeah.
Oh, really? It wasn't enough that I drove my dented truck to the meeting, made it past all the greeters. Now I got to be good enough to be called on by you? How about blow me, okay? That's what you're thinking. But you can't act like that. You have to act better than you feel, right? Even though they'll say, you know, at these meetings, sometimes they'll say, Bill, listen, we want you to leave the meeting, but whatever you do, don't call on Jim. He's nuts. And sometimes Bill will forget and call on Jim. And the whole room will go, oh, shit. That is not acting better than you feel. Even though you know Jim is nuts, and Jim is going to say the same exact thing he said for the last 22 years, you have to act like it's the first time you ever heard it, and you nod your head. Right? Because the reason we have meetings is so a newcomer can hear a message of hope. That's it. That is it. It's not to hear about the people you're sleeping with, the jobs you didn't get, blah, blah, dumping on a meeting. It's so a newcomer can hear that we can stay sober. That is it. That's what the book says, not making it up. So I'm sitting in a meeting. I have become the guy that should not be called on in my home group. They knew me as the angry guy that Earl sponsors. I'm sitting there, you know, my arms crossed, and this woman points right at me. She goes, you, would you like to share? And everybody went, oh, no, no, no. Delete, delete, delete. And I'm sitting next to my sponsor. I go, do you guys know Earl? He's very animated, right? And I'm sitting next to Earl, and I go, can I say whatever I want? And Earl goes, go ahead. Now, that's a sponsor greeting. If your sponsor says it's okay, that's good. Right? So I say, you know, they used to go like this. They used to go, and we'll start the meeting the way we always do. If you shared last week, please don't share, but we'll start the same way we have the last 22 years, Nancy. Nothing ever exciting ever happened to Nancy. It was like, you knew, here's 4 minutes of my life I'm not getting back. Dude, if I still had a tape of her, man, I could be, for insomnia, instead of Ambien, they could just give out tapes of Nancy. Trust me. It's like reading a DMV pamphlet in another language. God bless Nancy. So I said, yes. Earl said, say whatever you want. I said, first of all, Nancy, never share again. And then I pointed around at every, you know, and I made a deal with my sponsor that I'd never put a hand on another dude. I used to fight every day. But I got really pissed off, and I told every dude in the room, I said, you know what? I can't stand you, and I hate you, and look at you, kiss ass, and book thumper, and blah, blah, blah. And I said a bunch of foul things. And I said, matter of fact, there's one guy in here who loves me. Screw all of you. If I was on fire right now, ain't a one of you would pee on me. And nobody said nothing. I was on the edge of my seat going, say something. I'll punch a hole in your face. And Margie, two rows behind me, said, well, I'd pee on you, Danny. And everyone busted up laughing. Now, I don't know if you've ever been on like acid or Sherm or PCP. It's like I had this out-of-body experience where I was up in the corner looking down at the room, and I was laughing. My two fists that I came into the room clenched. You know, when they said, you need to let go, Danny, they weren't kidding. I'm not a let-goer. I'm a holder on. The only time I let go is to get a better grip. You know what I mean? I was laughing with them at my own expense. They were all laughing. Normally, I would have got up and said, shut up, or ran out and cried. But instead, I was laughing. And I just, it was like the lights went on. I was like, holy shit, I'm in AA. Look at Nancy. Look at this. Yes. And my maybe turned into, hell yes, I can do it. I knew right then and there I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew it. I felt that was my first spiritual experience. I've never had, man, a lot of stuff has happened to me in almost 13 years. You can imagine, life happens. But never, ever, ever has the option or to romance the idea of a drink. It's not even on the table anymore. It's not on the table. Right? And, you know, at the end of that meeting, I walked up to my sponsor and I asked him the most important question that any newcomer, you know how you got these sponsees that call you and tell you, you know, who they slept with, or the only time they call you is to notify you of all the bad things that happened from the decisions that they made that you weren't involved in, but now they just want to share the consequence. You guys know what I'm talking about? If you don't sponsor, you don't even need cable. You could just sponsor and put it on speaker. It's entertainment. You go, honey, listen, put it on mute. Oh, look. They're going to move in together. Kidding, kind of. It's fun. But so I walked up to my sponsor and I asked him the first time in my life the question that every new person or person that feels stuck should ask their sponsor. What would you like me to do? I walked up to the room and said, what do you want me to do? And he said, remember the what you win around here? We had this guy who was like this, one of those UFC fighters. You ever notice it's the people, I'm not putting anybody down, the guy with the tattoos all over his face that says, what are you looking at? Well, kind of looking at the tattooing, right? But, you know, which is okay. But this guy was scary looking. This guy had muscles in his face. The only thing he was missing was a sign that said, don't talk to me. And I said, Earl, what do you want me to do? I'm ready, man. Just tell me what to do. And he said, go say hi to that guy. I'm thinking, are we looking at the same guy? But somehow I turned into Forrest Gump. I was like, okay. And I said, okay. It starts happening around here. You know, you've been at a meeting where they go, and we need a GSR for the meeting, and your hand's up, and you're like, holy crap. I just, 2-year commitment? What did I do? You start saying yes, you know? And now, I'm done, right? Oh, yeah. I'm pretty much done, aren't I? Right? Okay. This is the story I'll tell you about. I'll end with this. When I came into AA, I was $170,000 in debt. They were garnishing my check, child support, never paid my taxes. Why would I? I was going to be dead. I remember going to the bank, and it said, please contact financial center. That's never a good idea. I mean, that's never good news. When it says that, they're not telling you, you have too much money in the bank here, Danny. You got to get another bank. No. So that happened to me, and now I've got these problems, and I've got to keep going to my meeting and be the greeter at my meeting with all these people, these assholes that I can't stand. You know, you're sitting there, and you got the door, you're greeting. Hi, how you doing? You're thinking, God, I hope you don't share. You know, but you got it, you know, faking it, you know, and you go into the meeting, and I got to sit there and listen to all these problems while I don't know how I'm going to pay my rent. I don't know how I'm going to eat, right? And I'm sitting there. I was working at the W Hotel in Hollywood, and I'm sitting in my Carhartts in my little tiny little dinky apartment with no heat, no air conditioning, 125 degrees or whatever in my apartment, and the phone rings, and it's my sponsor. Now, when your sponsor calls, even if you're doing brain surgery, you put a towel on the head and you answer the phone because it's your sponsor. And he said, come meet me at the corner of Reseda and Ventura. Okay. Jump off the shrimping boat and you go see your sponsor. That's what you do. I don't know about you. That's what I do. Earl calls me tomorrow. Would you follow him up a cliff? Yes. He hasn't failed me yet. So I go and meet Earl. Defeated. Just defeated. And he's standing in the corner of this hot sunny day in a parking lot, and he's got this folded up paper in his hand. And I'm like, hey man, how you doing? The long road we've been down now, right? 16 years I've known this man. Never given up on me, this guy that loves me. I'm like, hey man, what's up? He goes, this is for you. And I'm like, what is it? And I'm like, open it, find out, right? Stack of money. Come on, Earl, I don't want your money. He goes, just read it. This is an anonymous gift. Keep it or pass it on. He said, you know all those assholes that you hate at your Monday night meeting? The ones you said that wouldn't pee on you if you're on fire? Well, last week after you left, they passed the basket again because they heard that what was happening to you. And they heard that you couldn't pay your rent. And they heard that you might get into they were afraid you might leave. So they wanted to give you 2 months of truck payments. And I started getting emotional in front of a man in a parking lot in the daylight. So I ran away. Zoom quit. So I ran away from him, man. You know, and I went to the corner of the parking lot. And just as I was getting in my car, he yelled to me the most beautiful words that a man has ever said to me. And this is what I want to say to anybody new, and you're coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, and you think you can't do it, but I'm telling you, you can. He yelled, Danny! You're part of something! And I was holding that damn back, man, and it just came pouring out. I'm part of something. I got in that car, and I drove home, and I held that piece of paper, and I had proof that I was part of something, that I could do it, that I could stay sober, and that I could have a fantastic life. And so can you. Thank you.
Whew. Okay, let's give Danny and Kristen another hand for their share tonight.